Oh, no, good. I mean, when you think that the meetings for the hotel and guest house filled the clock in at the Villiers, filled the L-shaped room at the villa, certainly meant when anything a bit airy-fairy came up, like the fire regulations and stuff like that, I mean, that brought everybody out of the woodwork. They all wanted to know what was going on then. You know, everybody joined the association for about 5 years. And then grading and classification hit us. And that was literally the death knell for tourism on the island. People, certainly on the small ones, that didn't have enough money. Grading and classification came in. And that really was a lot of money wanted, wasn't it? That was where we'd struck.
There were a lot of demands on people's money,
yeah.
Resources, and, you know, to do.
And they were getting older.
It was needed.
Yeah.
Grading and classification to root out so many of the bad houses, but it, at the same time, it puts a lot of strain because it was a compulsory thing.
When did it become compulsory, do you think?
It was always compulsory, as far as the Iron Man was concerned.
I think 86, as you'll find in there, was certainly a lot of it. And while we weren't at loggerheads with the tourist board, we were certainly worried of what was happening to the trade, you know, because no matter what happened, the tourist board were going to make it compulsory, and that was going to be it, like, you know. So we just, as an association, had to just try and, you know, ease it in as best we could.
What sort of things were people saying at the time?
Well, you know, you can imagine some of these hotels had, well, nearly everybody, for instance, In these size hotels, had the four rooms out on the back outlet, and the maximum they could get in there was a 4 foot bed. Well, the new regulation said it was a 4 foot six double bed and a 3 foot single. So,
numbers down in a lot of houses,
you know,
and
it was a mass breakout to get 2 4 foot six beds well, you just couldn't not put a 4 foot six bed in a side room because you couldn't open the door. Or you couldn't shut the door, you know, you couldn't open the door enough to get in. Because the 4 foot bed was literally from wall to the back
to the
of the
door.
So that was
that meant people either had to
break rooms out or put them down to singles.
Or convert,
know.
It meant there were a few years where there was a lot, they were compelled to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it was money that people
didn't have.
Because numbers were dwindling.
No,
at
that time it started easing up as well, you know, the 80s were. From, you know, 79, where we'd had a good year, it had floated down.
It was Millennium, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the
it had floated down from about 74 onwards. 74 to 78 was, it was all right. It wasn't good.
Millennium.
Certainly wasn't,
millennium.
There was nobody charging
the
enough.
2 years that when the first 2 years that we had in here converting, we were busy.
Yeah. And
we
built up
that. Later on, it was after that things. You noticed the numbers were dwindling.
Even with, you know, offering on streets the same price as somebody next door offering for a basic, even in them days, you know. And
the steam packet companies opened.
Cooking and
it
stuff
was
like
when
that.
The steam packet stopped their services to Liverpool that the most drastic drop in numbers were.
That's
when they started messing around with all the ports and the things.
And that was
really did shake the island. Yeah, very much so.
So the transport links were affecting your trade?
Oh yeah, they do now. They
still do.
They do now. They virtually dictate the kind of seasons we're going to have.
Because
of the numbers that they're restricted to bring in now on the boat.
Yeah.
You see, and you know what the situation is, with how many they can carry.
It's their idea. They have thrown onto us 3 and 4 day holidays. We get complaints from people who want to come for 7 and 8 days, and they can't do it. You know, well, they certainly can't come for 7. It's got to be an 8 day, or a 10 day, or a 12 day. You know, and they're saying, you know, they're dictated to by the where the boat goes to and comes from, and when it goes back again, what their holidays are. So it's they're not getting holidays. They're taking short breaks because that's what they're forced to do.
So a majority of your visitors would still be coming by sea, would they, or somebody else?
Sea and air.
We get. I mean, now it's changed about. We are virtual travel agents in effect because we do sell holidays as packages.
Yeah.
So since Travel Services started initially doing, you know, offering you the services.
Is that the name of the company, Travel Services?
That's, where you can, you know, if you get a client who rings you up and asks you for accommodation, they want you to do the travel side as well, which we can do, thankfully, through Travel Services. We do quite a bit of business that way, but people are getting that. They want a complete package.
Yeah,
they want to, they don't want to leave their seat at home in front of the fire, if you like. They pick up the telephone, book their accommodation, and book their travel as well. And you do all the work now.
Yeah.
I mean, at one time you only booked the accommodation within the hotel, but now you do the travel side. And thankfully we were able to do it, and it has become very popular. We do very well through it. But it's a lot more work.
So that's the official
lot more
side,
paperwork.
The other side, isn't it?
A lot more paperwork
and
for this,
of course, we've got a lot more, a lot more changes of beds and things like that now. Like, but, you know, if you had a guy in for a week, that was it. You know, he was quite happy with his pair of sheets and the bed made every day, and it was in the middle of, top and tailed and things, as we called them, in the middle of the week. But now it's, you're changing beds, you know. Your chambermaids are—they're shattered. You know, reason not only it's a major clean every 3 and 4 days now because of the way things have gone. You know,
when did that change start to come about? When you first came to Cunard, was it very much changeover, say Saturday or anything like that?
Oh, Saturday bookings.
Yeah.
That's all you ever took.
Yeah.
That was purely a decision made by the hoteliers themselves. Each individual ones, you know. I mean, if you had somebody going out on the Saturday, you had to have somebody coming in on the Saturday. If you didn't have anyone coming in until the Sunday, you were losing money.
Yeah, it was a day gone.
And it was a day gone, and so you avoided that by, when people rang up, saying, or shall I say, if you had somebody coming in on the Sunday, it had to be a departure Sunday to match up then, in those days, with the Scottish sailings. And everything was back to back. But now, you can have gaps. It's three days. It's entirely how your bookings come in.
You don't take anything.
You take anything and everything that comes your way now. You don't refuse a booking.
No.
You have to be certain of having somebody in.
So when did the back-to-back booking start to crumble and you get this modern...
In the 70s again, I think, really.
The
it's all to do with 60s, the boats.
Early 70s.
It's all to do with the boats and
the
services
the boats
that they ran.
Down, you know? I mean, when
the
you
minute
think
they
that,
changed, they
I mean,
dictated to what the booking.
Somewhere. I've got a picture somewhere of 8 boats in the harbour, you know, 8 full boats, which between them could move, like, well, 2 of them could move 6,000, and the others were like 2,000. They weren't supposed to do it, but they were doing it, like, you know. So you literally had 20,000 people in a day went and came, you know, and that was Saturdays. Then it went, they were slightly cheaper, they came midweek, so it was Wednesday, so you'd done whatever you could. Yes, and that started in the 70s, didn't it?
But it was their timetable. When they left Liverpool, we lost that particular season.
Yeah.
And you were mentioning chambermaids before. Just thinking about staff, can you just tell me what it was like, the staff situation was like when you first came to Cunard? How many staff were you employing? Where from? You know, where would you be putting them?
Well, when I first came into it, you got the girls applying for jobs from all over the place, England, Scotland, Ireland. There always seemed to be a lot number of girls, and they were very much more willing to do the job, shall I say, then. But these days it's become increasingly difficult. Okay, yes, you can get the girls, but you it's getting them to do the job properly is another thing, and I blame these discos, late night discos, has created a big problem in that respect.
They come for holiday, haven't they now?
A lot of them.
The work's just a, you know, pain in the butt to them. You know, it's something that they've got to do. I mean, we used to get Scottish.
Scottish girls.
Who were good drinkers, good fun, but could get up with the morning. We're now lumbered with Irish, who, when they're sober, are all right, but
once they get their hold into the discos.
Yeah, once the discos scene comes on it, and they're just away then. And sometimes they get up and sometimes they don't get up. It's as simple as that. Like, so we're back to being jack of all trades again now. You know, you get up and you make the beds, because them lazy
It has always been the big problem.
It has always been
the biggest problem. And it'll never, I can't see it ever changing.
No. We try to use locals.
Locals don't particularly want to work in the hotels now, whereas they did a number of years ago.
Yeah.
They don't wish to work in the hotels.
So how many staff were employed here in the season when you first came in? Is that the same number now or not?
Oh, no.
Well, there were six girls. When you were running the hotel and I was outside, I think you had six girls living in, didn't you?
No.
So
there were six. Four, possibly five.
The kitchen girl.
I have four girls that used to work between the dining room
and
bedrooms and the kitchen.
And the kitchen girl that you had.
Whether that ended up as being somebody local or somebody who lived in. But now you can have any number up to eight staff.
Yeah.
So you have more now than you did?
Yeah, well, you need, because of the en-suites, the chambermaids and stuff like that. And then there's, they have to have days off. You know, nobody had time off in them days. You finished and that was it. You went out and you came back and done your work and then you went off again and, you know, go up for breakfast in the morning, the girls did. But then now it's, they're demanding a day off, you know, with so that no one's sleeping in the morning. You've got to have staff to cover for that. The en-suites, of course, demand...
they've made the work in bedrooms harder.
Yeah, you know, because they have to be cleaned top to toe. And as I say, with the holidays being of a shorter period, then the demand on the staff is even greater. You know, so it's we have sometimes, four chambermaids, or two seniors and two juniors, you know, helping and things like that. Yeah. Plus your staff, your dining room.
What about the kitchens? Would that be yourself cooking?
Yeah, plus, yeah.
We work the kitchen.
We work
so.
The kitchen between us, yeah. We do a tablet out for the evening meal. People order during the day for what they want during the night.
Yeah, it's a tablet out set meal.
Yeah.
But we have the choices.
We have a choice menu
as well.
Choice menu.
It's all to do with the grading. What you are supposed to supply. Let's put it that way. There are certain demands that you have to meet,
yeah.
You know, when you how long you have to serve your meals for. If you want to stay,
if you want to stay
within the grade that you had originally, you have to comply with certain demands.
So your evening meal now is an optional thing that can be ordered, so it's kind of like a restaurant thing, is it?
Yeah, it is really.
Yes.
Yeah. When she first gave it a table, it would be 54 breakfasts just slammed out. And 54 dinners slammed out, you know what I mean? Well, not slammed out, but I mean, you know, wham, slam, bang, thank you, ma'am. 5:30, and
everything went
on. The dining room gone,
everything
know.
That you would normally serve on a breakfast plate would go out in those days.
Yeah.
And people took it. And if they didn't want it, they just left it on the plate. Because it was all plated up, virtually.
Yeah, yeah.
Apart from eggs, which were the last thing to go on.
Yeah.
But now, because you do a choice... The range of variations on breakfast is incredible.
It really is. Yeah,
and we often laugh and say, whatever happened to the days when you just served bacon and eggs, sausage, tomatoes and mushrooms
and
fried bread and nobody changed. And
yeah.
Now you see you get people that may...
Yeah. They'll come in and say, we'll have three full fries without egg and sausage and things like that. And you've got poached eggs, boiled eggs, scrambled eggs. And they all have to be cooked all them, you know,
they're all done, kippers, which are most popular.
Yeah, still very popular, incredibly popular, aren't they?
Yeah.
No,
you do everything, you do.
Yeah.
But the demands on, it is harder working now in this modern age than it was when I first came into the business.
And I've done some awful tricks on her in that kitchen, I've changed that kitchen, and I never even worked in it, and I thought, oh, that's a good idea, and I changed it round. She's now got a Mamma Marie where she had hot cupboards and she knew everything.
I won't tell you what I called her.
It has worked out now for the better.
Because everything's served to order done to order.
So you think on the way the food is probably better than it was, or is it just different?
Well, it's just different.
It's
just different.
It's different. The way
yeah.
that it's served is different. I mean,
yeah.
that you didn't do choice meals.
You know,
when I first came into it, you had a daily menu, and that was it.
Yeah. We still run the daily menu. It's there, isn't it? There's chicken, you know.
Oh, you
we,
have
we
your daily menu. We do.
We have a daily menu, but then we run all the sides with it, like, you know.
All the choices.
All
there's
the
a choice menu as well that people can choose from as well.
So
it's there. You didn't get that when you first came in.
No. Monday, you know, Monday was braised steak, and Tuesday would be...
Well, whatever it was.
It was
excessive.
People just sat down and ate it.
I mean, if people didn't like it, if they they asked a lot of people when they first came in, they would ask you every day what. Because you didn't have, you had it one paper on the wall to say, and if they didn't look at you, you had to say what you were serving that day, and if they didn't like that, they'd say, "Oh, not like that." And the alternative then was a salad. That was it.
What about
yeah.
things like vegetarians? Is that a new thing?
Oh, no.
We've always catered for them.
We've always catered, but there are far more now coming in, vegetarian people. You know,
so
as long as they give you advance warning.
You know, as long as we know what they want, or what they want, can have a vegetarian. So, you know, it's no problem to look after them. You know, there's so many things
and
on the market.
Just thinking about the guests generally, I mean, you must have seen them get up to some... weird and wonderful things over the years. You must see a lot of human nature in this job.
But open your eyes. I should have started writing the book.
Yeah, that was the worst thing. We should have done what you're doing now, like taped off some of the things that we've seen and that have occurred.
Can you tell me one or two?
Mainly boys trying to sneak girls in.
Yeah.
I think that's been forever.
Last year we found I found a guy at 6 o'clock in the morning with his kick down on his ankle, sort of sleep on the main staircase. So I took a couple of photographs of him.
Yeah. And those days, you see, everybody had to be in by 12 o'clock. The door, front door was
locked
and there was no such thing as...
When
no
you first came in.
When I first came in, yeah. Because there weren't any... Well, there weren't any discos and there weren't any late night places open.
So 12 o'clock
was... So 12 o'clock was the normal thing. Okay, yes, you would... If
well,
then
we,
you see you had
a
keyboard that was in the hall and if there were any keys still on the board
or
wherever it was that they were placed, ours was never actually in the hall. It was always a bit further away than that and discreetly hidden. You knew that somebody was still out if a key happened to be on the hook. But you always had a bit of lay when you waited up till they come in and you intended to give them a telling off. And then, of course, if there was any noise in the bedrooms upstairs, you went round and you were knocking on the doors because it all fell back on you in the long run because people would come back to you in the morning and say, complain about
the
noise.
Did you hear the cuckoo last night? You know, some lunatic was hanging out the window shouting cuckoo.
I
hung him out the window by his ankle. She never done it anymore.
They never went and knocked on the bedroom where the noise was coming from. They came down the next day
and
played hell with you because complained to you about the noise. So you
wasn't
had
it actually, wasn't it?
That was when I first came into it. I can remember doing the rounds very often, but it was the accepted thing, it was a normal thing to do.
It was gangs of boys and gangs of girls came in, you know, the family rooms for a couple of weeks would be
you have to keep an eye on things then. But
when did the midnight curfew go?
Oh, I think when the casino came originally.
The casino came, everybody got a key. But we still charge £5 for the key, by the way, so that
charge a deposit on a front
door
key. They get back when they hand it in.
Yeah, so you know, there's one in the bar and or one in the dining room. You know, there's a notice there to say, you know, there's a £5 charge on it because it makes them a little bit more responsible of them, you know.
About the key, because it's still your home, you see, after all. And
it's their response, you know, it's their gear that's up in the room, so.
What sort of things do they get up to?
Oh, just idiots, you know. We've stopped taking stag parties because they're just a joke. They just go over the top because they just throw things and, you know, if you spent all winter decorating, the first thing you don't want is a stag party and just to wreck the place, you know. So we've stopped doing that. We'll take anything within reason, but we won't take stags knowingly, like, you know.
We take
golf parties. We still take groups of golfers and things like that, you know.
Responsible people, hopefully. But then you don't know what you get.
Have you ever had any particularly strange or eccentric people come by?
Oh, we've had some weird ones.
Any incidents that stick in your mind?
I don't know, there's that many. One of the funniest things that ever happened was we had a little lad in who was a wizard on the little machines, and this is years ago when they'd just come out and this little kid was...
Shoot the bandit
down. And you had to press a play with the lever and press the button. So the kid's old fellow was watching him like, and this kid could get up to bed 7,000. Come on, Dad, you have a go. So the old fellow would never go. He chased the kid to bed, and we used to leave him out in the bar with £5 worth of change for him to learn to play this machine. And in the end, he played the young fella and beat him. And the young fella's face, he wouldn't speak to his dad. He scored about 14 or 15,000, the old fella. He's over the moon, like he was worse than the kid. Like, you know, well, what a put down for the poor little lad. He was only allowed to give him like £2 to play the machine, you know.
We had somebody, we used to get people who'd lock themselves out of their room and come down.
The fire precautions were when we had the fire precautions, because all the doors have
that
to close on
and
a number of old
people,
you know.
They didn't put the snig upon the door.
What are the sort of things that make you laugh, bring a smile to your face?
Well, they're too new. They're funny at the time and then you forget.
Some of the things that, you know, they just like, you know, couple of the Irish, you know, the font of old jokes, but the two old ladies that came, and she'd locked a case, but hadn't locked it properly, with a bolt. So she snapped. I don't know how she snapped the thing off, but she snapped it off, and then she said, "You can have the case." And it was one of those cases where the two things interlock, and you put the lock down through the four little holes, you know. And she hadn't done it that way. She'd put it through the two little cracks. So there was nothing wrong with the case, because she just gave us like a £30 case, went out and bought another one. They do things like that, you know. There's some of the gear that gets left, you wouldn't believe, would you?
Yeah.
If
girls bring it down from the bedrooms. They hang on to it.
Yeah.
You do, because you're not sure whether they've been left deliberately or...
A pair of shoes, socks, underpants, you know, drawers and stuff, you know, they haven't packed them. You know, please can you show me such and such, you know, Max coats.
Any particularly dreadful days when things have gone wrong and you've had trouble or everything's been a nightmare?
When you don't go and get the staff up, yeah.
That's only the bad part of the job is the staff. It's a sorry, sad thing to say, but apart from that, the job's easy. The job really runs along.
If they all do their
own jobs,
yeah.
It's easy. You know, it's...
You can handle the problems.
Because it's invariably, you know, somebody's up on the wrong floor, and but I ordered the first floor front, it says so on my thing, and you've got them in the third floor back.
That's because they've been looked through an agency.
You know.
As you're probably aware, you know, every man that's done through the tourist board of Magic Holidays, and whenever they come through to you to ask for a room, I always say...
Stipulate where it is.
Are they elderly? You can generally grasp from the booking that they've got. And the dates that they are they elderly, and they haven't, they're supposed to put an age. I don't know at this moment. Well, the only room I've got available is on the third room. I stress if they're elderly, they're OAPs, it's not suitable for them. And they come back and say yes, and you check it, everything's okay. Please state on the thing. And it has happened. More so years ago than
crutches,
it does now.
Wheelchairs.
Oh, but my husband
angina.
With angina.
And you've got them on the third floor.
And it's no fault of your us.
No.
A lot of the time it stems to them because they haven't stated to the original agent they've gone into that there is a problem.
With health, you know.
With health.
I know there's new disability regulations and access ramps and things like that these you're supposed to have these days. I don't know if that's something that is a problem with an old building.
Well, it is only
if you state that you can take those
type
of people.
You know, and
we don't have any bedrooms
on the ground floor, first floor. So.
We just can't take disabled people.
Are there any other problems that the old building causes? Does it worry you?
Constant repair. They're all moving. They really are. I don't even know that the lock from itself is built on reclaimed ground. There's another thing on the piece that's another reclaim on the front of us, but this piece at the minute is sinking rapidly. Actually, I don't know. The vibration.
We get cracks appear, you know, and you think, good God, that's a new one.
That's a new one. You know.
I haven't seen that one before. You know.
Yeah. Doors just won't close and doors won't open. You know.
I mean, when the Iris project first started across the road, I don't know if you were here, and you knew how they started.
It was
horrendous,
yeah,
really.
The whole house, children.
Everything shook. You stood here,
yeah.
And the vibration through the ground coming through to here
This one wasn't about it's that one where the concrete floor
just
is,
concrete
the next one,
floor,
you know,
in there.
You can just feel the whole, and they brought a thing down here, he says it's not shaking, and the bloody doors were open and stuff was falling out, and it's what?
The things in the kitchen were rattling in the cupboards, and that was the kind of reaction it was having on these houses. They put a bolt in the wall, didn't they?
Mm.
To which was supposed to
measure any
level of movement and all the rest of it, which when it was completed, they took a reading and they said what was there was minimal, showing nothing, was it?
Yeah.
But we know it had to have a reaction on the house. We know by cracks we're getting now. We know by fire doors that closed previously on the corridors with no problem. And last year there were a couple that we were having trouble with, you know. It's slow reaction. And we're convinced that it's all from... I mean, they did a hell of a lot of banging across that road.
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, another issue that some of the hoteliers feel concerned about is the planning authorities, and some people feel that they're restrictive, other people don't mind. What's your view?
Planning and much as well.
Planning permission for changes, the double glazing, altering the building.
And double glazing one is absolutely ludicrous on the front. Certainly since they've tried to stop me. I mean, I've got double glazing down in the basement, as you can see, and I've put it on the ground floor. But to go above that, when there's so much of it on the Douglas Promenade, and they keep saying, you know, you can't do it, I find it totally crazy. For instance, I took a grant out to do and done the back. Had at the same time took the grant out and done the front, I could have got away with it. But I'd done it 2 years too late, and when I wanted to do the front, they wouldn't let me do it then. So,
All the back is all now double glazed for the two houses, but
the front.
They won't let us put in
double glazed front.
Well, they will, but the ones they want us to put in are the sash tack ones, which are not as effective as the.
The
sash tank ones have been proved not as effective.
We've seen them in the seaport. They took them out. They had to take them out and redo them.
Because we're getting the drafts through.
We're getting drafts and water through.
The cost of them is three times as much.
Two and a half times as much. So you know we've lived through all that, and as I say, Maureen's had quite a long time in the hotel trade and as we all have, you know, we've always been involved in, around the hotel trade, and it's been a happy life apart from government and the steam packet.
What do you think your sort of hopes and fears for the future are? I mean, what do you see? In would you still yourselves think you'd be here until you as long as you can, or?
Well, we don't
as long
know.
As our health and everything else
You know, health is the main thing, because once you've got the health, it's not that hard. There is room for this small type of hotel, I feel. If the government, in their infinite wisdom, will say, hey, right, we do agree with tourism, and that's what it's about. But at this moment in time, if I was an outsider looking on, I'd be terrified of the attitude of government towards tourism. And the way that the steam packets are running there.
It's been abandoned,
you know,
rather.
That's what we feel. We get the feeling that we are abandoned.
Is that how you feel?
Yeah. While there's still a lot of money getting pumped into tourism at the tourist board end of it, it looks like 9% of it's going in wages and not in what I suggest is the advertising capabilities that we should be getting. You know, I think we need to go back to grassroots on advertising. I really do.
That's not just our feeling.
That's
a general.
That's a general
feeling
of the association, you know, which I'm still too I see of, and with Chris Roberts being the president at the moment, which he wants to get out of, and I'm too I see of that, so I'm still involved in that.
How does it feel watching other houses on the promenade in disrepair and knocking down?
Well, I don't mind the knockdown so much. The disrepair, I think, has stopped. It's been sad. I think Douglas actually is starting to look very tasty at the moment, and I just hope that the guy next door, who's bought next door, who's emptied it out at the moment and is going to redo it, will find time to do paint the front of his next door, and the lock will be painted. And I think this block then will start to look quite tasty again. This block actually was the last block that was the full block, the whole block working. Not quite the case now.
It's a couple of years ago, wasn't
it?
Yeah.
Every house was a hotel of some kind, apart from the Waverley, which went into an apartment, like that.
I think that was the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah. We've seen vast changes, you know, when you think about it.
Yeah. But where do you think it'll be in another 10, 20 years?
I don't know. I think probably there will be 40 hotels left on Douglas Promenade, maybe.
Do you think, Maureen?
Yes, yeah. You see, the unfortunate thing is that so many of the hoteliers existing now are all of the same age group as ourselves. And if they can't sell it as a hotel, they're going to sell it to someone else who's got the money, who wishes to convert it to offices or apartments.
Yeah. Not even private houses.
Yes, but I mean, they're valuable as private houses when you compare the difference what private houses are selling for and what
apartments are.
What a single unit is selling for.
Is that right? There are a lot of, there are not very many young people coming into the businesses then these days.
That's what it looks like.
From the association.
Yeah. From the